And now it's my distinct pleasure to present the Philip F. Anschutz Trophy to the captain of the Columbus crew, Guillermo Barros Escaloto.
Of the 2008 MLS Super Draft, the Los Angeles Football Craft select from the University of Akron.
This happened in Argentina, maybe people died. Someone could die, you know?
If they took Nuevo Chicago and they were moving it to Rosario.
Still a chance for a fourth goal here. Awful drives forward. Awful scores! What a goal! It is amazing! King Harrison grabs the crown in second half stoppage time!
Hey buddies, it is the Massive Report podcast brought to you by our great friends at Old North Arcade. I think still probably, right? Correct? We're going with it. Yep. Yes, the Old North Arcade 21, a 21 and up barcade with dozens of classic arcade games, foosball, air hockey, and a dope porch. OldNorthArcade.com. Hit it up. It's been a pretty eventful couple weeks of the off season. We just kind of decided to just stop in and talk and see if there's anything that we might be able to touch on for a little bit of Massive Report after dark tonight. Not that it matters because you're listening whenever you're going to listen, but we've got Patrick Guldan with us. Patrick, how you doing, sir?
Not too bad this evening.
Excellent. Sam Fahmy on the ones and twos. Sam, sir, good to see you.
Good to see you too.
I'm great. Joining us for the first time, Nick Hudak as well. How you doing, Nick, of the famed Hudak family?
Still experiencing a slight final exam hangover, but I'm here, ready to roll.
Excellent. We're happy to have you with us, Nick, and we also may be having Alex Stanek join us a little bit later. We'll see. You'll have to wait and see. That's it's called a teaser. So we may have misled you a little bit earlier. It's actually been a pretty eventful off season so far. And we've got a whole lot of ground to cover. And let's cover with the furthest back news. We'll go back all the way back to December, earlier this month. Greg Berhalter, head coach and sporting director of Columbus Crew, no more. Now the new head coach of the U.S. men's national team. Guys, it was more or less the worst kept secret in soccer for a while, but now it is the reality, and it's the new reality for the Columbus Crew. Patrick, where does reflect on this a little bit? This move for Greg Berhalter. Not too many coaches in this league get to leave on their own terms, and this is a great move for him, at least personally and professionally.
It is rare to be able to leave on your own terms and make your own choice here. And, you know, it was the worst kept secret in American soccer, but Greg's now the guy in charge of the U.S. national team. And it's kind of weird to say how his style is going to influence things and circling dates on the calendar for late January to see the first starts of what Berhalter ball is going to look like for the national team. And it leaves Columbus in a little bit of a different spot because you had someone who controlled every facet of the on-the-field decision-making for this team. Everything started and ended with Greg, from transfers to how the team lined up, any sort of roster moves, any sort of training and in-game choices. It was Greg making those decisions at the end of the day. And that's a big change, not to have the one person who controlled things for 5 years. And so that means it's going to be a vastly different Columbus Crew in 2019. And, as we talked about earlier this month, that process is already in place. Caleb Porter, a possible option. Josh Wolf also interviewed for the job, And then, you know, since we had one person doing all the work, that's now been split into two, that we now are seeing that there might be a general, that there will be a general manager. And right now it's Bruce Arena has been named. Dave Sarokin was someone who was linked to the job. And just today, Ali Curtis has been interviewed or linked with the open general manager position. So a lot of evolution and change coming for Columbus this offseason on the field. We'll get to the off-the-field stuff here very shortly.
Is Pat Onstad's name also being in there? Obviously, he's in that acting general manager role, but do you know, has he interviewed for the position, or is he a candidate?
I have not heard whether or not he is the candidate for the position full-time. My instinct is that he is, at some level, an option for that role. He did talk a little bit about it during the press conference for Zach Steffen's transfer to Manchester City, which is another big piece of news that's happened here in the offseason. That he was one of the people that Greg said, you know, you have the tools to be a general manager in this league. And so that's one of the reasons why he's kind of running things right now as the team really kind of, is in transition.
Speaking of some transitions, I think we do have Alex Stanek back on the line with us. Alex, you there? Guess not. I see his little picture there. He's smiling at me on the Google chat, but we're not hearing him. So we'll return to this. So Greg Berhalter gone for Columbus Crew. You mentioned some of the candidates, Pat. What do you think, I mean, the direction for the team, and I'll throw this one, you know, out to everyone. You mentioned Caleb Porter. He's one of the candidates. And then also Josh Wolf is the ones that we know have been interviewed. It's an interesting dichotomy where you've got, you know, Josh Wolf, which is kind of continuity, from Greg Berhalter's system. Caleb Porter, who's had a lot of success in his own right, but a very different personality, his own playing style, although, you know, not, you know, completely dissimilar. What do you look at, see, or think about the contrast between these coaching candidates? Is there a front runner, or who are some other potential candidates?
So I had heard in conversations with Pat Murphy that we had both heard similar things, that Caleb Porter was kind of running ahead of Josh Wolf in the two candidates that we had heard as far as the coaching position. One name that we heard early on was Bruce Arena as someone who is stepping into that role on the general manager side, and he was kind of the leader by default. And then Pat Onstad named the acting interim general manager, and just today, I would consider the most interesting name as far as general manager candidates. Ali Curtis had two very good years with the New York Red Bulls in executing what Red Bull wanted to do with that team. That included really kind of a doubling down on the academy, and then really kind of cutting some costs and running a very tight ship. He was he kind of is Berhalterian to me in one way, in that he is exceedingly prepared for any and every eventuality that might happen. He brought a 300-page plan when he interviewed for the New York job, and that was one of the reasons why he got it. And that's the kind of dedication and attention to detail that Greg was known for. And on the coaching side, Caleb Porter was the front runner from what I understand, but now some very serious conversations happening in LA by people I trust. You know, when Jeff Carlisle and Kieran Dyer are saying that Caleb Porter's looking to LA and he's sitting courtside watching LeBron there, there's obviously a very, very strong interest in showing what Caleb Porter could be as far as a part of the Galaxy community. And so that kind of leaves Columbus in a little bit of a, you know, if Porter was the leader of the interviewed people, then that leaves Columbus in kind of a difficult position that they then need to figure out what they want to do next.
I think it's interesting. You know, for me personally, I prefer the continuity with Josh Wolf going through this transition. You're going to have new ownership. Obviously, you've got Zach Steffen departing, potentially Will Trapp as well. I mean, obviously, Zach Steffen, he'll be there at least for the better part of the season, and we'll, you know, touch on him a little bit more in depth later. But, you know, guys, what do you see about these? Who do you think, what direction does this new ownership want to put in? You know, do they want a splashy signing like Caleb Porter, who's gonna, you know, get some headlines, or do you want someone, you know, where there's that continuity with the Josh Wolf, or, you know, elsewhere, somewhere between?
I think you have a situation in which you are not quite sure. Your new, I'm going to say, quote unquote, ownership, because nothing is really actually confirmed yet.
True.
So we have that. And really, who is consulting that new ownership? Is there the Haslam family comes from a football background. The Edwards family comes from construction and medical background. So how are you going to, who is stepping in to consult on these coaching staffs or the general manager choice or anything like that, let alone player personnel decisions that involves bringing in any sort of player when you don't have a coach and you don't know what the philosophy of the coach is going to be. So I think the crew is kind of actually in a very tender situation until they figure out they have at least coach and GM in place. Well, let's say that they have ownership first in place, then coach and GM, and then you see how it goes from there.
I think that, well, hi guys, by the way.
Hey,
I
Alex.
Think, I think that in terms of finding the coach and in the GM, I have a lot of faith that they're going to get the right person. I think that Josh Wolf and Caleb Porter, if it's either of those two individuals, are both excellent candidates. Mm-hmm. I think that there are other candidates out there that would also be good choices. But I think it's probably going to be one of those two, and I'm very comfortable with either one. I think they're different coaches in a lot of ways. I think that they would construct the team in a different way. But this is going to be kind of a clean slate season anyway. So I am not really that concerned with who they pick. I think that you can mold a great team out of what we have in either direction. And so I think that we'll see how things all pan out. I was pretty sure it was going to be Caleb Porter. And I'm not sure if something has transpired that has changed that. I'm not sure if this is Caleb Porter trying to get leverage, either in terms of player selection and transfers and things of that nature, or in terms of his salary, or if there's genuine interest with LA and maybe we'll lose him to LA because that opportunity's opened up. We'll have to wait and see, but no matter what happens, if it's either of those two guys, I am totally confident and comfortable with either one. And as for the people who are overseeing this whole thing, the people who are advising leadership, the people who I've heard might be involved with that whole situation, I'm very, very confident in them as well. So I feel like we're in really good hands, and I can't wait to see what happens in the coming weeks.
Yeah, Alex, I think I'm with you too on that. I think even with the new ownership, even though there's some uncertainty with, you know, the Haslam's football background and the Edwards family, you know, having to do with all their medical history and whatnot, I still think that either if it is Caleb Porter or Josh Wolf, I think that, you know, once they put either one of those guys into charge, if assuming they do, in position to succeed.
Well, and one thing that I just want to mention really quick, I'm not sure if everybody saw it, but there was an interview with Arthur Blank before MLS Cup, and they asked him about the situation in Columbus, and he said that he's personally had conversations with the Haslam family, kind of giving his advice to them on certain aspects of kind of the professional soccer business and things like that. So that's a pretty good person to have discussions with as well, because there's probably been no team more successful in getting kind of a jump start on things than Atlanta. So that's a very, very good source of information and feedback. And I think that Arthur Blank
and Jimmy Haslam are going to talk quite a bit over the coming months and years, and hopefully we can try to replicate a little bit of the magic that they have going on down there.
Certainly Atlanta, with that magical season, the capturing MLS Cup, we'll probably not talk about that because who cares about MLS Cup? It was fine. Good for Atlanta. Great for them. Wonderful story. But back, you know, the person who has Atlanta's number will always have Atlanta's number. Our number 23, Zach Steffen, but not for so much longer, only until July. Rumors been swirling for, you know, for a while. I think most of us on this podcast have been saying, you know, since the beginning of this season that that if we got another season out of Zach Steffen aside from 2018, that would be gravy. We're gonna get at least about, you know, three, four months of Zach Steffen. But then he will be departing to Manchester City for a historic or record fee for Columbus. I don't know. Is the exact number in? Do we know how much the actual amount is?
No one said the exact number of the Steffen transfer. It's somewhere between 7 and 10 million. Pat Murphy had it pegged at around 9 million, had what he had said, seen and heard. I think it ultimately end up at the higher end of that. So it will come close to at least doubling the record transfer for the team, which was the 2014 Giancarlo Gonzalez transfer, which, you know, that certainly changed the course of the team. With some of the investments they made with that money.
And it'll be, do we know who gets this money yet? Like, is it clear? Is it the new ownership? Is it the, you know, old ownership? Is it MLS? Because does MLS just get its cut? How's this money, you know, get distributed?
I don't think it really matters, actually, is the funny thing about this, is that, so I think ultimately it stays with the club. I think this is a case where it will stay with wherever, you know, the Steffen's rights are, and that's actually going to be part of the negotiated price or something like that. If there's some sort of cut that needs to go to pre-court for this so that he's made whole, they think it's outside the deal, because ultimately this is a sporting type transfer. The money is used for sporting purposes, and I think it's worth breaking down how this transfer really plays out. We're looking at 75% of the fee staying with the team. The team gets, we'll use round numbers, that's a $10 million transfer. That means $7.5 million comes to Columbus Crew for sporting purposes only. So this is not supposed to be in the case where they put this in the owner's pocket and he takes it away. This is for funding designated players is the primary use for it. And then also any other sporting enhancement that otherwise wouldn't have been made. So, in the case of the Crew, maybe it might be an upgrade to the training facility if certain news hadn't already happened. But then finally, $750,000 of it can be turned into general allocation money that is directly able to impact the salary budget.
And then presumably also some of that, you know, that sporting money, it could go toward academy, the academy, which I think, you know, some could argue that you look at the Will Trapps, obviously, but that this academy is kind of, maybe the investment hasn't been there so much under the current or immediate past ownership.
Yeah, I'm assuming that the money is going to go to whatever kind of shell company is owning the Crew. It was a Team Columbus Soccer LLC or something like that. I think that's the one.
No. It's officially, I believe it's JAHC Inc.
Okay. Which makes even less sense. So I'm assuming it'll go there, and then ownership of that thing will transfer to the Edwardses and the Haslams, maybe. I don't know. But ultimately, this is something that I think people have been expecting for a while. I'm sure it factored into the negotiations. The money's going to be there in one form or another, and I think that it'll be reinvested in the team, and that's what's really important. I think they need to go out with that money, sign some, you know, Almirón type player that you can flip again in a couple years for a boatload of money, and just kind of follow that plan. That's what I would do if I were them. So hopefully we'll see some, you know, 18-year-old South American wonder kid, you know, look up Football Manager wonder kids and pick one and bring them to Columbus. That's what I would do.
You know, it's interesting because, and I think that kind of comes to, you know, is this going to be a sort of, I guess first, let's talk about in the immediate, you know, immediacy, the impact for the Crew as a team from a player personnel standpoint. So you have Zach Steffen, but, you know, not for the full year. Is John Kempin the next step for this? Can you go with him for the remainder of the year? Do you feel comfortable with him? I can't even remember the name. I know Logan Ketterer didn't have his contract renewed, and I can't remember the name of the kid we drafted in the first round last year.
Ben Lundgaard.
Yeah, Lundgaard. How do you feel? We feel about the goalkeeper situation, post Zach Steffen for Columbus Crew. Do they look at a free agent goalkeeper potentially?
I mean, that's what I would do. Yeah, the summer transfer window will be open, so you can sign somebody, you know, 2 weeks before you know Steffen's gone, get them acclimated, get them kind of ready to go, and then have them take the reins. I'm sure there's going to be kind of like a farewell tour kind of thing for Zach Steffen. They're going to make a big deal about it, as they should. This is a kind of a big moment for the club, and he should be celebrated for his accomplishments and the accomplishments that we're all pretty sure he's going to make in the future as the, you know, number one for the U.S. national team. So I'm sure they'll have a plan. They will have months to scout a replacement. They won't really need one until the summer, so I wouldn't necessarily go out and sign one before then. Get somebody ready to go, get a deal agreed, get them in a couple weeks before Steffen ships out, and then have them ready to go for that final match.
Sorry, I couldn't find my unmute button there for a second. I'm kind of with Alex, but I think this still draws us back to what type of system this new coach is going to play. Do they need a goalkeeper that's good with his feet like Zach Steffen was? Do they need somebody who is more of a shot stopper, which Zach was definitely that? So, throughout the year, if MLS has something, it has a decent number of pretty good league level goalkeepers. And I think that, while unfortunately I don't think that either of the goalkeepers on the roster right now can fill in Zach's shoes, I definitely feel that it's going to be somebody from the outside.
Yeah, I think you're definitely going to have to find somebody from the transfer window, like you just said. I don't think that they're going to be able to get somebody right from the club that's going to be able to step in. And obviously, that's some big shoes to fill, is Zach Steffen, obviously, as the price would suggest. But I think that once he does leave and goes to Manchester City, they're going to be able to find somebody in the window, hopefully. I think July is going to be, obviously, a good opportunity to, you know, have 6 months of the season to have already gone through and see who – you know, could be a possible replacement and see, you know, who maybe have been doing well in the season. So I guess a lot's going to be depending on the new coach, definitely.
Are they going to be still scouting Scandinavia like the way Greg did and try to like find some young diamond in the rough? Well, I guess it would be diamond in the snow in Scandinavia that comes in and tears up the league at goalkeeping. I mean, you never know. As Pat Onstad said, they obviously still have scouts, so that's good to know. That's good to hear. Those scouts have come through a few times, so let's see how they do.
I think that brings up a kind of interesting point, and it's how much, you know, is the new ownership D and Jimmy Haslam, as well as Pete Edwards and the extended Edwards family, going to have in some of, you know, is there, do you think they're inclined to make a splash? I mean, not only you obviously have these dollars that you're going to have from Zach Steffen, but, you know, also the money, the sizable money that Jimmy Haslam's bringing to them, or the Haslam family and this ownership's. And, you know, is there, do you think they want to get a big, flashy signing in there to kind of, you know, drum up support, show that they're the polar opposite of Anthony Precourt? And is that really a direction that is that we want to go, or that you want to see this franchise go, versus, you know, what Greg Berhalter did. Maybe, you know, give him a bit more to work with, but making smart, shrewd investments, getting players that you're going to get their best years out of them, and then be able to make a profit off of them.
I think you have a situation here where you have a you have a premier deadline date that you're looking at, and that's 2021.
Mm-hmm.
So there's going to be a lot of things that I wouldn't be surprised if the Crew have not the greatest of years for the next 2 years, more because the focus is on 2021 versus dumping a whole lot of money onto player acquisition. Now, they might like start building up towards that, with it culminating in the beginning of the season, 2021 season, in a new stadium, in a place that is hopefully mostly sold out on a regular basis. So there's going to be probably some strategy here, obviously. But I could really see the next really 2 years being two building years leading to that culmination of 2021 and new stadium opening.
See, I'm not sure I agree. If I were them, I think they're going to make a splash now. You can make a splash in Major League Soccer for the price that Jimmy Haslam pays for like a third string Browns quarterback. Mm-hmm. So I would go out and I would sign somebody, make a statement. This team has been kind of beaten down through this whole pre-court saga from a fan's perspective. I mean, it's been pretty brutal. There have been periods of time where it's not been fun for the diehard fans. I can't even imagine how miserable it's been for, you know, your casual fan who just assumes that the team is gone. So I think they need to, you know, make a mark early on. Let's go get somebody either this winter or more likely probably in the summer. Get a name in, somebody who's going to be exciting, and start rebuilding that base. And have that base ready to go for when that new stadium opens. I would kind of ramp up, but I would start with a splash. I would go out, I would get somebody familiar. I'm not sure I would go out and find some diamond in the rough. I would maybe look at, you know, a known commodity from Europe, try to get them in alongside somebody who's younger. But I definitely think, you know, 2 years is going to go by before you know it. Having the stadium news from time to time is going to be helpful. Having Save the Crew as an advocacy group is going to be amazing. But it will definitely help to have success on the field and have some sort of a known quantity to bring in the kind of casual fan who's just, you know, plays FIFA on the weekends kind of stuff. So I would definitely go out and get somebody this year.
You heard it. Alex pleading to Jimmy Haslam, Falcao, Falcao.
Heck yeah, man. Let's do it. Cowtown, let's go.
I think that any sort of transfer is going to really depend on the state of the team. And, you know, we already talked about the whole goalkeeping. You know, that's not going to be your splash signing because, you know, it's they're not signing Tim Howard. I don't think they're going to make a rapid mistake there. I think you look to see where this team will have holes. And, you know, Will Trapp has been mentioned as someone who has had interest in, you know, had interest from overseas. And then you have someone like Federico Higuain, who's getting a little bit older, that maybe you look to do some things like that. And then, you know, you have some underperforming wings that maybe, you know, that's a spot. So I think ultimately it's going to be where you look to see where the holes are in this team and the kind of staff that you bring in, to how it fits with the coach and how it fits with the mentality that the owners want to do. So, you know, if you're bringing a name like Ali Curtis, is he going to be charged with, you know, doing a top-to-bottom development plan for the team so that you're supercharged with a supercharged academy, with developing top talent, with you know, key pieces, and not really bringing in the big name? You know, we'll see.
So, I mean, if you did want to get a goalkeeper, Gigi Buffon, former Juventus and Italy legend, will be out of contract at the end of June 2019. So
Tim Howard 2.0. is what you're saying.
Comparing Buffon to Tim Howard is a little unfair, I think. Buffon is a bigger name, much more talented, still putting in good performances for one of Europe's top clubs. So I think he could definitely get it done in Major League Soccer for a season. You could sign him to a one-year deal. That would definitely be a splash. And then bring in some young kid, and it'd be fun. Buffon in black and gold? Come on, that'd be fun. That'd be pretty cool.
But goalkeepers wear, like, green or yellow.
Oh, you know what I mean. You know what I mean.
I'm just giving you a little stick there, Alex.
I do think it would be interesting to get somebody like that.
It is, because you look at this team, and if the speculation, you know, if Will Trapp departs as well, suddenly you can look at this team and say, you know, are they in a rebuild? You've got, as you mentioned, Pat, or Patrick, you've got Frederico Higuain, who's, you know, 34, 35 going on. Not a whole lot much more gas in the tank, although I think we've been saying that for the past 2 years, and he keeps proving us wrong. So maybe he'll continue to keep proving us wrong. Harrison Offal, on the other side of 30, as you mentioned, some underperforming wings, some good maybe young players, Eddie Opoku's, Nico Hansen's, but, you know, are they going to really develop into, you know, big difference makers, you know, starting 11 type players? Then you look at the other side, Justin Miram, you know, he's certainly a strong piece, but he's 29, he's 30, which is old in soccer years. And just kind of looking around the field, if you remove some of these pieces and then some of the other really big contributors, outside of, you know, Milton Valenzuela's or Arturs, are getting older, is this a team that could be rebuilding for the next couple of years or something leading into that 21? Or is it still a team that you think that with this new ownership is going to have the ambition to go after an MLS Cup, or at least try to make deep playoff runs in the immediate term?
I think when I look at this team, I see a window that right now with the personnel is mostly closed, frankly, because you're talking about another year older for Higuain. You're talking about another year older who, you know, Pedro Santos has not really been stellar in his year and a half in black and gold. He's now at 30 or 29. Justin Miram's at 30. You have some players who have now reached the point where they're starting to hit their decline years, and, you know, it may be slow, but you also have, you know, people like Miram and Santos that had some really poor seasons last year, and, you know, the chances of bouncing back, you know, still might be pretty good, but they're not as good as when they were 25. And so I think that you don't want to necessarily get saddled with a bad contract. I don't necessarily I'm never one for you have to go splashy to be splashy. However, I think that if you find the right person, if you find the right player that is going to fuel that interest, and they're exceedingly rare, that also fits what you're trying to do sporting wise, then you go for it. That's, you know, that's what DC did with Wayne Rooney.
I guess the other question too is Jossie Zardes, if, you know, out of Greg's system, regardless, you know, if Josh Wolf remains, he's, you know, at least we presume will keep, you know, a similar system, at least with similar elements on his own as well. And of course, he's the quote unquote striker whisperer. But, you know, what do you have in Jossie Zardes outside of the system? It'll be very interesting to see, you know, how he produces under, you know, what's going to be, at least to a degree, a different system, and certainly with different players feeding him the ball. But the big thing, the other, you know, big news we got to talk about, and we've kind of talked about it already, but the new stadium revealed last week, Thursday. Everything happens on a Thursday, after a day after the MLS, the Haslam Group, the City of Columbus, and Franklin County announced that Moffray Stadium and the area around that would be redeveloped as a community sports park. Then suddenly we're seeing renderings. We've got MLS deputy commissioners in the room at Land Grant for everything. And, you know, it's real, guys. It's real. It's happening. You had Columbus City Council vote to sign on to an MOU on Monday to help finance some of the infrastructure around the new stadium. You've got, as well as the new sports community sports park, the county will be voting on Tuesday to provide some other public assistance, not toward building the stadium. That's going to be Haslam's and the Edward families on their own. And of course, I don't know, where do we want to start? Do you want to just start with how crazy it is? Think of where we were last year around this time, early December, you know, in the bad times, the months immediately following Anthony Precourt's decision, to where we are now. This team is truly on the cusp of being saved, where it is now just a formality. They've got the downtown stadium, everything they wanted.
I think one word that comes to mind that we talked a little bit about, the Haslams and the Edwards, is ambition. And this is a realization of not only their ambition, but of the city's ambition, of what you know, Columbus Crew can be as part of the city. I think that also highlights the Columbus way. You know, you look around at a lot of municipalities, you look around at a lot of state governments or even the federal government, and you can see dysfunction a lot of times, or you see things that have ossified. Columbus is at a size and has a group of lawmakers that are biased towards action, and you saw how that came together. So you have a presentation on Wednesday. Out of nothing to say, hey, we have an idea for what Moffray Stadium is going to look like. You know, it's not going to be the home of the Columbus Crew anymore. It's going to be the home of a soccer or of a sports park of some sort, and most likely going to have a lot of soccer fields. It's going to have indoor soccer fields. It's going to be the training site for the Columbus Crew. This white elephant is not going to be this hole in the city. We're going to have something to fill it, and it's going to be something that provides a tangible benefit to the city of Columbus and to the region. And then the very next day, you know, you're turning in one of the last close-in undeveloped properties within the downtown area into one of the best-located stadiums in all of MLS. With you know, 20,000 seats, and upgraded amenities, the ability to drive all the metrics that MLS wanted to see, and it comes out that, yeah, okay, so it's going to be a public-private partnership. You have this memorandum of understanding, and by Monday, you have Columbus City Council voting on this memorandum of understanding for their $50 million of the $280 million project that they put in the MOU. And then the next day, you have the State House lining up the bill, and the bill coming for a vote today in the House, and then the Senate likely to vote tomorrow. I would imagine that's going to pass. And then you have the county commissioners going to vote on their $45 million part of this project on next Tuesday, the 18th. All three, spoiler alert, it's going to pass, and it's going to be unanimous. All three of the county commissioners have already spoken out positively about this project and what it could mean to this community. And I think there's a lot of money going towards redevelopment, and you know, you hear a lot about money going to sports. You know, much like any project, this is partially infrastructure, but the big change is that, unlike any sort of deal that you have in Austin, you have a clear, defined community benefit. And, you know, I live not too far away from Offer Stadium, so I'm intimately aware of the both good and bad sides of the track in this area of Columbus. And there is nothing like this in the city. And it is fantastic to see this idea as the next step that would be a community benefit compared to the things that Precourt Sports Ventures tried to do in Austin. The city of Columbus delivered.
You got it, Pat. I think just based on what the new ownership and, you know, after watching that press conference, you can just see how much the new ownership just wants to involve the fans in everything, even just with the community sports park. But, you know, they mentioned the game day experience with, you know, the pregame tailgating and, you know, walking into the Nordeck during the game and even, you know, the Nordeck 2.0, if you want to call it. It's going to be a wonderful experience, and I'm sure every Crew fan is going to be excited for it. But I think I can speak for everyone on this one. I'm pretty excited to see a Columbus-inspired TIFO now.
Well, and I think that this whole thing from start to finish has been really well done. The community sports park, as soon as I saw that, I mean, the thing that kept jumping out at me is Lamar Hunt would have loved this. This is such a great way to honor the first soccer-specific stadium, turning it back into this grassroots center of development for soccer in this community, developing something that can be there for the long term, something that is going to benefit this city for decades to come. There's no better way to honor that legacy and that early investment in soccer by investing again in soccer. So I'm so thrilled about that. And then I was at Land Grant. I know a lot of you guys were as well for the big stadium announcement. And the whole thing was just amazing. Seeing all these community leaders coming together from the business community to the political side, to the fan side, have everybody come together to celebrate this moment was really, really incredible. And I had a chance after the presentation to speak briefly with one of the staff members from the deputy commissioner's team, I guess, Mark Abbott's team, I'm assuming is who that was. And he was very enthusiastic about the whole project as well. So MLS is fully on board. The city is fully on board. The ownership group is fully on board and the fans are fully on board. So full steam ahead on this thing. I think it's going to be amazing. I think it's going to radically change Columbus soccer forever. And I can't wait to see it.
You know, one thing that I want to make sure to recognize and is you mentioned the state dollars that are going into it, Patrick, about $15 million voted on today. Introducing that amendment, that was Rep. Mike Duffy. If everyone remembers, he's the one that brought ORC 967 to the Attorney General's attention. He's the first one to, you know, first real public official to, you know, really truly champion this Save the Crew cause. And, you know, were it not for that lawsuit happening, the existence of that, MLS probably doesn't come to the table and we don't have the opportunity for this. You know, full disclosure, Mike's my uncle. I'm a little bit biased to this, but it is, I mean, when you look at all this, and the other thing is that those state dollars, and one of the reasons that he kind of pushed for that is because that is formally accepting assistance from the state, which would trigger the Art Modell law clause. Now, of course, we're past that, but were something to happen, you know, Jimmy Haslam, D Haslam, I don't know, something happens to them and their son decides he wants to, you know, move the team somewhere. Regardless, whatever scenario, that the state saved, you know, saved by that. And we've got, you know, it's confirmed too in there. So it's, a lot of people that have played such huge roles in this and in that community sports park and the right way that the public officials have gone about this, which is just so it's interesting because I think you can tell that our city, our county, everyone, we've benefited from watching the missteps of Anthony Precourt and Precourt Sports Ventures in Austin, and being able to put together an actual, real, stable plan that's fleshed out between, you know, the public-private partnership, as opposed to, you know, the stuff that it looks good on the surface, but, you know, underneath it, it's bullcrap. And so you've got, I mean, thinking that they're going to be utilizing a historic number of minority contractors to help build this stadium. There are set asides for the private developments that'll happen around it, the Confluence Park and Village, that they will ensure that we've got affordable housing there. It's great to see, again, you put it great, Patrick, that, you know, this is going to be a community benefit. This is the community. It's not just an economic development benefit that we'll reap, you know, some rewards from, you know, increased sales tax earnings. People are going to benefit from this. Jobs are going to be created because of this. And we're going to have the best stadium in MLS, the crown jewel. And you, as you mentioned, Alex, MLS is all in on this, it appears. So, you know, does that mean, you know, are we looking at it? It's going to be such a weird new dynamic, new MLS, where we're not the, you know, I'm going to feel weird not having like tinfoil hats on that the league's out to get us the whole time, but we could be the new hotness.
Yeah. And there were some comments made at the land grant event that were really interesting to me. There was kind of not direct talk about US-Mexico, but some talk about US-Mexico. I wonder if that's back on the table for us in the future when this new stadium is built. I'm not sure if they're going to try to reintroduce that to Columbus to try to recapture that Dos Azero magic in the new stadium.
Especially with the Greg Berhalter tie.
Yeah, so I think that there is going to be a lot of stuff happening in that stadium, not just crew games, but U.S. men's national team, U.S. women's national team, you know, concerts, all kinds of stuff. It is going to be a community center. Confluence Park around it is going to be amazing. It's right in that kind of corridor of champions that was originally talked about forever ago. Not at the same location at the Abbott site that was talked about initially, but it's kind of still in that same row. And the sky's the limit for this thing. I mean, it is going to be so good. And the team and the fans and everybody's going to, you know, really get behind it, I think. And I just cannot wait. I think that the next couple years are going to be really, really exciting. We went through 1 year of misery to get potentially decades of just awesomeness. So I think that when all is said and done, this is going to be really, really great. One other thing that I wanted to touch on, I've been seeing some people outside of Columbus, particularly Austin journalists, saying, oh, well, Anthony Precourt never could have got a deal like this, you know, blah, blah, blah. That is such crap. The reason he couldn't get a deal like that is because he went into it with a completely different mindset from the way that this ownership group is going into it. Look at what he's been doing in Austin, and it's basically how much can I squeeze out of you in terms of my own benefit while giving you as little as humanly possible. That is not how this ownership group has gone about business. And that is why the city has been able to get this thing through so quick, because there are tangible results that are going to be, you know, felt in the long term for our community that are good. And the benefits are really being split fairly. And so, you know, if everybody goes into it with honesty, fairness, and with good intentions, you can make magic happen. That is not what has happened in Austin. And I feel sorry for those city officials who have to put up with that. But our city officials are recognizing that, hey, this is actually a really good deal. These are people that we can work with, not only now, but into the future. This is something that's going to be good for our community, not only now, but into the future. And I really think this is a great moment for our city. It's something that should be celebrated. I know that there are going to be a lot of milestones in the coming weeks. But yeah, this was a great period of time that we just went through, and it's only going to get better.
Absolute.
I was just reading an article, another article on whatever it is, Channel 6. Anyway, talking about how the money that the city's pledging $50 million to the stadium And it's amazing to me that simple reading has become a lost talent amongst today's people. None of the money is going to the stadium, at least as far as they have reported, but it is going to infrastructure. It is going to the repurposed facilities around Mafre. It's going to nothing. Like, no millionaires are getting money in order to subsidize their stadium.
Well, I will say that I think that part of the misconception here is that this process is moving very quickly. Mm-hmm. I will say that the project is getting a TIF, which means they're getting some very enhanced tax revenue from this project, and there is also a property tax waiver on this, since this is actually not going to be owned by Edwards Haslam. This is going to be owned by a stadium. Gosh, what was the MOU saying? There's going to be a stadium company that essentially owns it, as far as a nonprofit, a quasi-governmental entity. So this deal does have some of those stadium sweeteners that aren't necessarily the best for the city. But I do still consider that this is generally a fair deal as far as these things go.
And the other, for why it's happening so quickly is, as they emphasize, it's also under an MLS-imposed deadline to get this done of December 31st. You know, we could speculate, you know, what happens after that, what would have happened after that. But I think you look at it, and they definitely went about this the right way, securing the right, you know, benefits, being able, again, actual tangible community benefits. And then also some of, you know, the other guarantees that are going to be able to help out our residents, to show that this, you know, really will be something that we can build off. And there will be a lot of, you know, positive economic growth from that. I'm just hoping that Betty's, that little bar down on Nationwide Boulevard that's kind of open sometimes when it wants to be right by Huntington Park. I'm looking forward to just tailgate or, you know, going there before games.
I think it'll be interesting to see. It's, you know, the reaction I think that the public is giving is based on headlines, because they're not even reading the headlines, let alone reading a memorandum of understanding or anything like that. But the city also passed a 5% quote-unquote entertainment tax on tickets. So basically, by the time that stadium is built, within a couple of seasons, maybe a little bit more, they're going to kind of regain back whatever money that they've put in infrastructure back from that tax. Plus, you know, if you have retail and you have residential and you have all that, you're going to get business taxes, you're going to get employee city and state taxes, all that stuff. The economic benefit from whether the new stadium or even the old stadium project, and how much permanent job opportunities outside of construction it will provide, is more than will offset the amount of money that the city and the county are putting in within probably about 10 years.
So can I speculate on that deadline? What would have happened if we didn't make it? And we're going to make it. I'm not concerned about that, but I will tell you what I think would have happened. They would have pretended like the deadline didn't exist, like they did in Austin about 16 times. So I don't think that it would have been a deal breaker, but we're going to get this done before then. It's going to be awesome. But yeah, I think they would have been like, oh, well, we're going to go and ask for an extension. And then that extension immediately would have been granted. So no worries, but we're still going to get it done. We'll get it done ahead of time for you guys. Don't worry. It's going to be fine. But yeah, the Board of Governors would have just extended it.
Yeah. I'm thinking that they're not going to say, hey, Jimmy Haslam, oh, you missed it by 15 days, or, oh, you know, I hear good things coming out of the Columbus partnership, and you just have to have maybe 4 more months. No, Jimmy, we don't want your money. I agree with you 100% there, Alex.
Oh yeah. Well, yeah, you guys, you're right. You have to move and play in Austin next year. By the way, it's December. You don't have a stadium. Obviously that's a moot point now. But yeah, there was no way it wasn't going to get done at that point. It's going to be, you look at all this, Sam, and this arena district, you've got Nationwide there, Nationwide Arena, and it's going to be wild. Of course, Huntington Park, LC, all the areas around it. You've got people on the Facebook already, Nordic Facebook, are finding a way to complain and are complaining that we aren't going to be able to tailgate, which you've gone to Blue Jackets games, right, guys? They've got parking lots. It can still happen.
Yeah, and the real messy situations are going to be when you have a overlap between either Blue Jackets and Crew or
we're
Clippers
talking like
Crew.
17 days a year for Crew games.
Yes, well, but I mean, you never know. You're gonna have probably at least one overlap where things are gonna get messy. But in the great scheme of things, I was at a Blue Jackets game a couple weeks ago, and I ran into a couple of other Crew fans. And as we were crossing the street to go back into the arena, we looked west, and the sun was setting, and it was real pretty. And this was before any of the announcements. And I'm like, man, imagine if that's your view as you walk to the stadium. And it was just like, wow, that's kind of cool. So, but yeah, I mean, you have some logistics that you have to look at. You have some infrastructure situation. That road is they're gonna have to do something with that road or create more roads in that plan for the stadium, because otherwise, if it took you long to get out of Mafre, it's gonna take you extra long to get out of that spot.
I'm just rooting for Sportsmageddon down there. There has to be a month, and I think it's actually April if it's going to be anything, where the Blue Jackets would be playing, the Crew would be playing,
oh, yeah,
and the Clippers would be playing.
Like Patriots and in Boston.
And then I want Sportsmageddon in the arena district where all three are playing at the same time, just enough overlap that you might be able to get to all games. Mm. That would be enjoyable.
It will still be better than the Quarter Horse Congress. It will still be better. It will still be better.
Probably smell
least,
better.
Absolutely. I was just going to say that. It'll smell better. You won't have to watch where you step for fear of stepping into stuff that you wouldn't want to step into. And there's lots of stuff to do down there. So, if you got to park a little bit away, walk, see the sights. It'll be great.
There'll be a bridge over the river.
Oh,
bridge
yeah,
over
yeah,
the river.
Yep. So there'll be parking on the other side, too.
There will also be bike trails. So if you want to drive your car to somewhere where you can park it and then just bike to the stadium, there you go.
So what is that, how do you think, and I guess we've still got a couple of weekends or of weekends, seasons to go, but, what's it going to be like playing for this team next year in Mafre Stadium? I mean, what do you think? Let's get in, in the spirit of our tradition for this podcast, making people make, calls and picks at the end. So starting for who's going to be managing this team coming opening day for the penultimate season in Mafre Stadium for the Crew. We'll let Patrick Gul'dan, who do you think?
I at this point don't really have any insight. I'm going to put my picks on who I would like to see. I'm rooting for an Ali Curtis, Josh Wolf led Columbus Crew for the 2019 season, as they supercharge as they go into the Confluence Village Stadium.
I like those picks a lot. You kind of got what I'm going to be going with, but we'll go next to Sam Fahmy. Sam, what you thinking? You don't have to necessarily pick what you think is most realistic. You can also go with what you want.
I think it would be I don't look at the coaching the same way or as in depth, I guess, as Patrick and Patrick do. So I think I'm going to trust their judgment. But, there's a lot of things that we are going to be looking forward to now. We're looking at maybe a new jersey release for 2019.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we're going to look at how those renderings for the stadium are going to evolve between now and 2021. We're going to be looking at the summer. I mean, now we have a busy summer with Zach's transfer, and we have probably some sort of groundbreaking during the summer for this stadium to make it by 2021. So I'm looking forward to it probably for the first time in a long time, that 2019 season.
And I'll agree with Alex that I think there will be a big transfer. I don't know if it'll be a big name signing, but I bet in the summer they're going to bring in somebody, you know, that's going to break the transfer fee.
Oh, I like to hear that. All right, Nick, let's get some bold predictions. Give us one bold prediction for opening day 2019.
Totally unqualified to say this, but let's go with Dave Sarajan, baby. I'll say him anyways. He can get us to a 1-1 result with France. He can get us to a 2-1 victory against the reigning champions Atlanta. Let's see it.
I like it. I'll take him over Bruce Arena at that general manager position, man. Alex Stanek, what was your bold prediction for 2019? You can add a couple.
All right, so I think we're going to see Caleb Porter as the head coach. I still think that's going to go through. I think that the fact that Boca Juniors lost in the Copa Libertadores final might see Guillermo leave, and I would like to see Guillermo as sporting director instead of Bruce Arena, although I still think Bruce Arena is the most likely choice for that. And then I do think they're going to make a summer signing of a big name. And my money is on soon to be free agent Gigi Buffon. So let's get hashtag Gigi Crufon going on Twitter and replace Cowtown with a new dumb rumor for 2019. New year, new dumb rumor.
Speaking of dumb rumors, I did see that Corinthians was buying Federico Higuain today. I have it on good authority that I think Guilherme, who reads the Brazilian papers, you know, back home, said that, yeah, I think Corinthians is already bringing in a playmaker. So I think that one's just made up, maybe.
I have good authority from gold.com.
Yeah, they can pry Pipa from my cold, dead hands. They're not having him. I will riot if they sell Federico Higuain. That is the last thing they should do. They should definitely keep him and sign Buffon.
Opening up a designated player spot by selling Higuain to sign Buffon. That would be something.
I think you would just buy down. I think the play is that you buy down Pedro Santos and then sign Buffon.
Now I'm going true ridiculous rumor here.
Yeah. Let me think. I mean, can we do even more ridiculous than Buffon? I'm going to need a couple weeks to think of some like 37-year-old, you know, Russian player or something. You know,
Franco Ribery.
Oh, Ribery would be fun. Yeah, that'd be fun.
Oh, it'll be. Well, you know, we might be back. We'll probably have to come back at once Crew does make a decision on that head coach, sporting director, GM, whatever, whoever it's going to be, whoever they will be. I'll just talk about that and, you know, check in on you guys. Make sure you're doing well. For what it's worth, I do kind of, you know, the realistic part in me goes with you, Patrick. What I'd like to see that Ollie and Josh Wolf. I don't want Josh Wolf going to another team, man. I don't want him going somewhere else and having success, and then us getting stuck with, you know, Caleb Porter just going crazy after something. But I'll be very happy with Caleb Porter's too. I don't think we can lose because this team is, Columbus is the greatest team the world has ever seen. And I think they're going to go undefeated next year. The Invincibles for MLS in 2019. There's my bold prediction. If we don't talk to you before, have a great happy new year and we'll talk to you in 2019, but we'll probably end up talking. We might end up talking to you before then. Until then, hey guys, it's been so good talking with you guys. I'm glad that we were able to be back. So for Patrick, Nick, Sam, and Alex, this is Bart saying bye, buddies. We'll see you.